Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Welcome to a History of the Space Race podcast, episode 77, Apollo 17. The next and final mission to the moon was Apollo 17, which took place in December 1972. Apollo 17 had originally been slated to launch in November 1972, but in response to President Nixon's fear that a problem during the mission might distract from the 1972 presidential election, NASA had moved the schedule back 1 month into December. Of course, the beginning of the end of the Nixon administration had already started by then with the Watergate scandal. The Watergate burglars were arrested in September 1972, before the election. By January 1973, after the election, five people would plead guilty in connection with the break-in, and within a few months, the scandal would start to consume the public. Turning back to the moon, though, for Apollo 17, NASA wanted to land in the region of the Taurus Littrow. Located slightly above the equator and north of the Apollo 11 landing site, the Taurus Littrow was another site in the lunar highlands. As with Apollo 16, the goal was to investigate volcanic activity believed to have formed parts of the lunar highlands. Though, of course, it turned out that the Descartes region where Apollo 16 had landed was not, in fact, volcanic in origin. The other sites considered for a landing for Apollo 17 were the Alphonsus Crater, located near the middle of the moon, slightly below the equator, and the Gassendi Crater, located further west and much further south of the equator. The Alphonsus Crater was ultimately eliminated because it had less scientific interest than the Taurus Littrow, and the Gassendi Crater because there was a central peak in the crater that would be difficult to reach. Meanwhile, at the Taurus Littrow, geologists believe that the astronauts would be able to collect a variety of samples from the lunar highlands. Moreover, during Apollo 15, the command module pilot, Al Warden, had flown over the site and described it as being volcanic in origin. A helpful factor, since the geologists had all guessed wrong when they thought the Descartes region was volcanic. There was also a third and very interesting alternative proposed landing site for Apollo 17. The last alternative landing site was to land at the Sokolsky Crater, located on the far side of the moon. That is, the side of the moon that never faces the Earth. No Apollo mission had landed on the far side of the moon before. A landing here would definitely have yielded all kinds of new information, and not just for geology. NASA, however, rejected the idea because a communications satellite would have been needed to maintain communications on the far side of the moon. With funding being cut from NASA, there was simply not enough resources to provide for a communications satellite. A landing on the far side of the moon would have also presented a number of other difficulties. In fact, no one had ever achieved a soft landing on the far side of the moon, manned or unmanned, until 2019, when China succeeded with the Chang'e 4. The original crew selected for Apollo 17 were Commander Eugene Cernan, Lunar Module Pilot Joe Engel, and Command Module Pilot Ronald Evans. Cernan was now a seasoned veteran, having flown on Gemini 9A, which tried to dock with the augmented docking target adapter, and Apollo 10, the moon landing dress rehearsal. Joe Engel would be new to space, as would be Ronald Evans. During the early stages of mission planning, however, way back in 1970, Lunar Module pilot Joe Engel was replaced with Harrison Schmitt. NASA decided to swap Engel out for Schmitt because Schmitt was a geologist by profession. And in 1970, after a third Apollo mission, Apollo 18, was canceled, the scientific community pressured NASA to include a scientist on at least one of the moon landing missions. Schmitt had originally been slated to fly on Apollo 18, but with the cancellation of that mission, Schmitt was now bumped up to Apollo 17. Schmitt is the only professional geologist who has ever landed on the moon. He earned a doctorate in geology from Harvard and had been selected to join the astronaut corps back in 1965 in the fourth group of astronauts. Schmitt had also never been to space before. Apollo 17's backup crew, meanwhile, was staffed with astronauts who had all already flown on an Apollo mission, since there would be no further Apollo landings and no need to train an entirely new crew of people. Here, though, there was also a change to the backup crew. The backup crew originally consisted of the crew of Apollo 15, David Scott, Alfred Warden, and James Irwin. But after the crew got mired down by the postal covers scandal, they were grounded and replaced with Young and Duke from Apollo 16, and Stuart Roosa from Apollo 14. On December 7th, 1972, Apollo 17 launched. The launch was spectacular. It was the only launch scheduled to occur at night. Apollo 17 took off at 12:33 a.m. Eastern Time, about 2.5 hours late after encountering a hardware problem, the only hardware problem to delay an Apollo launch. Despite the late hour, over 500,000 people had gathered around the Kennedy Space Center to watch this last manned mission to the moon. After reaching orbit, Apollo 17 proceeded with its usual steps of a translunar injection maneuver. Mission Control did tweak the trajectory of the translunar injection slightly to get Apollo 17 to the moon a little faster to make up for the lost time in the delayed launch. The next step was then the transposition maneuver for the command module to dock with the lunar module. For Apollo 17, the astronauts named the lunar module Challenger and the command module America. Both names were selected based on a spirit of nationalism. Challenger was a reference to the nation's attitude toward the future, while the name America was a thank you to all Americans. The journey to the moon was rather uneventful. And after reaching lunar orbit, Challenger undocked from America with Cernan and Schmitt inside. The two then proceeded with a 12-minute powered descent to land on the lunar surface. As with other J-type Apollo missions, Cernan and Schmitt planned to perform 3 EVAs on the moon. As was usual, the commander of the mission was the first to set foot on the surface. As Cernan stepped onto the moon as the first person to do so for the last mission to the moon, he thanked everyone who made Apollo 17 possible.
And Houston, as I step off at the surface at Torres Litoral, we'd like to dedicate the first steps of Apollo 17 to all those who made it possible. Deck, I'm out here. Oh my golly. Unbelievable. Unbelievable, but is it bright in the sun? Okay. We landed in a very shallow depression. That's why we've got a slight pitch up angle. Very shallow, dinner plate like this crater, just about the width of the strut.
Cernan and Schmidt started the first EVA only 4 hours after landing. They began by preparing their equipment, deploying the lunar rover and the Apollo Lunar Surface Experiments Package. For this last experiments package, NASA had included a series of unique experiments not previously set up by the prior landings, such as a gravimeter, an atmospheric composition experiment, and a meteorite detection experiment. The astronauts then took a drive in the lunar rover to 9 different locations. During the drive, Cernan and Schmidt started a practice of collecting samples along the way. Basically, Schmidt would use a scoop to collect some of the lunar soil without even getting out of the lunar rover. After collecting their samples, Cernan and Schmidt returned to Challenger after over 7 hours. For the second EVA, the astronauts drove to Nansen Crater. This was a site located 4.7 miles away from the landing site, making this the furthest that anyone has ever driven on the moon. On the way to the Nansen Crater, the astronauts stopped at another, at the time unnamed crater, to take up some more samples. But while at this unnamed crater, Schmidt took an awkward tumble, and now the crater bears the name Ballet Crater. At the same site, Cernan took samples that would be kept in a vacuum even after returning to Earth. The samples were to be opened only after better techniques were developed to analyze the samples. The astronauts also made a stop at the Shorty Crater. Here at the Shorty Crater, they discovered orange soil. This was believed to be beads of volcanic glass, which caused some excitement, if only because it no longer looked like the astronauts were stuck in a black and white film. Cernan and Schmidt's final stop was at the Camelot Crater, where they collected some 75 pounds of lunar samples. This second EVA concluded after 7 hours and 37 minutes, making it the longest EVA on the moon to date. During the third and final EVA, Cernan and Schmidt traveled to a gigantic boulder that they named Tracy's Rock, after Cernan's daughter. They then went to the Van Sorg Crater, where they collected some 146 pounds of samples before heading back to Challenger. Just before heading back inside the lunar module, Schmidt also picked up a rock weighing nearly 18 pounds, the largest rock recovered during Apollo 17. Here is Schmidt joyfully talking about picking up his rock.
Wait, let me put in a big bag. And
just that brown one you saw it here before, Jack.
Okay, go ahead. No, it's a gray one.
Okay.
Oops. Okay. Yeah, I just lost the sample. In my pocket, I guess. Let me get some tongs. Okay. Then you go ahead. I'll walk right here.
After Schmidt got back inside Challenger, Cernan was the only one left standing on the moon. And to this day, he remains the very last person to set foot on the moon. Before getting back inside the lunar module, he issued this challenge.
Bob, this is G, and I'm on the surface. And as I take this last step from the surface, back home for some time to come, but we believe not too long in the future, I'd like to just let what I believe history will record, that America's challenge of today has forged man's destiny of tomorrow. And as we leave the moon and Taurus Littoral, we leave as we came, and God willing, as we shall return, with peace and hope.
Meanwhile, in orbit, Ronald Evans performed a series of his own experiments, one of which was biological in nature and involved the use of 5 mice to determine if they were affected by cosmic rays. Evans was kept so busy with experiments that at one point he overslept, and mission control was unable to wake him for about an hour. After 3 days being in orbit, however, it was time for Challenger to lift off from the moon and rejoin America. Apollo 17 then began its journey home. As with Apollo 15 and Apollo 16, the command module pilot, Evans, got to do a deep space EVA on the way home by going outside the spacecraft to retrieve some cassettes. On December 19, 1972, Apollo 17 splashed down in the Pacific Ocean. Apollo 17 set a series of new records as the last mission to land on the moon. First, Apollo 17 set a series of new time records. It was the longest crewed lunar landing mission at 12 days and 14 hours. The longest time spent in lunar orbit at over 6 days, and the most amount of time spent on EVAs on the surface of the moon at over 22 hours. Second, Apollo 17 also set the record for the furthest distance traveled from the lunar module while on the lunar surface at 4.7 miles. And it also established the record for the greatest lunar sample return at 254 pounds of samples. The scientific benefits of this last mission to the moon are still being reaped today. Earlier, I mentioned that Cernan had collected a couple of vacuum-sealed samples near Ballet Crater. Well, those samples were only finally opened in 2019. NASA was investigating the samples in preparation for the return to the moon during the Artemis program. And as for that nearly 18-pound rock that Schmidt recovered just before getting back into the lunar module for the last time, literally millions of people have gotten to touch it. And you can touch it today if you go to the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C. And if you'd like to see America, the Apollo 17 command module, that is located at the Space Center in Houston, Texas. With the moon landing missions completed by the end of 1972, NASA was already looking towards its next major project in 1973, the launch of Skylab, America's first space station. Meanwhile, the Soviets were racing to launch their own space station first. Although they had launched Salyut 1, the first space station in history, the fact that the crew of Soyuz 11, the only crew that ever operated inside Salyut 1, had died in space, put a bit of an asterisk on the whole first space station in history title. And so, the Soviets were still in a space race with the United States, even though that mission was no longer to the moon. More about this next time.